we have lost the art of randomness and lost the art of magic and lost the art of having the space to just go and create and to just go and play with that freedom, you know? I mean, how can you enjoy the game that you play?
Hello, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Before we start, real quick, this episode is going to be in English. First of all, because Kieran is from London and he lives in Dubai and just doesn't speak German. And at the same time, it's a big part of my mission to explore the world, meeting inspiring people and bringing back home the mindset and experiences. My today's guest is Kieran O'Neill. I met him 2 years ago in London in an influence deep dive with our mentors Rich Litwin and Daniel Priestley. And out of that weekend, a small 5-person mastermind was born. And since then, we've been checking in regularly as coaches, as entrepreneurs, but also as men navigating growth and ambition. Kieran is a former athlete as well. He's been a boxer and today is running a successful mental performance business where he works deeply one-on-one, but also built an own certification program for coaches. What I really like about him is his sharp, strategic thinking on the one side and his depth, honesty, and emotional intelligence on the other one. In this conversation, we're going to explore a big question. If money didn't exist, would you still do what you're doing? And why depth sometimes matters more than scale. And why performance, doesn't matter if it's in sport, in business, or in life, ultimately comes down to one thing. Can you play the game without losing yourself in it? And one more thing before we dive in. If this conversation resonates with you, if you're at a turning point right now in your life, or you just don't want to figure out it alone, you'll find 2 ways to connect in the show notes. There's our Impact Club retreat called Half Time this April. And there is the Impact Club, a community for ongoing reflection, growth, and deep conversations. All right, let's dive in. This is Kieran O'Neill. Oh, Kieran, I'm really happy that you're coming to the podcast. Feel a deep connection. I appreciate that you take time. What is the question that's on your mind or on your heart right now?
You asked me to think about this question and I bounced around with it over the last 24 hours. And the question that came as you asked the question was something different, which was, if money didn't exist, would you still spend your time doing what you're currently doing? I asked myself this question all the time. If money didn't exist, would I still want to spend that hour how I spent it? And I think the power of that question helps us understand, well, from a work perspective, am I playing the right games with the right people in the right arenas? And you can't love the game every day. You know, there are going to be days, weeks, and months, quarters where you're like, I'm not loving the game. But if you can get more days where that yes than a no, I think you're trending in the right direction. So that's a fun question I like to play with.
What do you like or love about your game the most right now?
You know, I still love the one-to-one element. I still love working with people one-to-one, one-to-one conversations. If money didn't exist, I'd still do that. I reached a ceiling in the TMP company, which you and I spoke about, which was as we were scaling, hiring consultants and going down that path. And, you know, it was held up to the mirror was held up to me with some of my mentors, which is, well, if you want to go and blow this thing up and really grow and scale this, you're going to have to step back from your one-to-one. And then I said, no. And I reined in that ambition. And instead of the vanity metrics of scale and higher revenues, it was like, no, I just love speaking with people one-to-one, you know? And I think funny didn't exist, I'll do that again and again and again. And that's not just clients. That's what we're doing right now. That's on podcasts. I've just launched a radio show, like on that game, and having people dial in and having conversations with people there. I think it's that. And that's what I'm realizing is like depth over width is the thing that's on my mind at this stage of life, you know?
What do you find in depth?
To peer into someone's soul, and also to allow someone to peer into your soul, you can explore what's truly important to you in that moment and in that period of life. You know, and don't get me wrong, like my work is all around mental performance. How do people think, feel, and perform on another level so they can accelerate their businesses and accelerate their personal growth? And there are many tools and frameworks and spreadsheets that we can use to get more performance, more productivity in, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to enjoy it more, you know? Whereas in a one-to-one conversation, you can, really start to understand somebody's soul, the mind, the way in which they think, the way in which they feel. So then you can elicit change in a way which helps them enjoy the passage of time more. And I think that is the thing where you just can't beat that, you know? And whether that is performance coaching for business owners or whether that's helping a young athlete in my spare time who's got some questions around mental performance in boxing or football or managing their emotions, like it's kind of the same thing. One's in a more paid capacity, one's in a more volunteer capacity, but it's still the same essence, you know? It's still the same thing. It's like, well, you know, what do you want and why do you want that? And what's slowing you down, you know? I think that for me is like the fun part of the game, which feels infinite, you know?
Infinite. The one word that lands the most is truth. You find truth in sharing from deep down.
And your truth. Because your truth might not be the truth to everyone else's. And if that's the case, are you willing to be disliked for your own truth? And are you willing to honor your own soul and your own truth? And a lot of our unhappiness and a lot of our performance blockers in life actually is us just not being honest with ourselves and with others, you know? And when you can make that internal shift, everything else tends to shift as well.
What is a truth you feel right now in your life that doesn't really match the truth of others in your surrounding, working, private environment, in society? What is coming up? Where are you different?
So I'm based in the UAE, in Dubai. And this city is, I would say, like a young adult with a point to prove. So it's super fast, super efficient. Everybody's all gunning for success and the next level. And it really facilitates that in a number of different ways, you know? You just even in the environment, you know, you'll walk around coffee shops or hotel lobbies and everybody's got laptops out and they're all excited and they want to know what you're up to and they want to open doors for you. And it's really, there's a beauty in that. But I think as I looked at the scale question, I think we met 4 years ago or 3 years ago, and I was asking that same question, which is, okay, do I continue down this path of scaling a bigger team of consultants, or actually do I, air quote, play smaller, right? Where do I go? And I think a truth that I have that is perhaps slightly less popular with a lot of my peers and my colleagues and my entrepreneurial friends around here is they're all scale, 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 wide, wide, wide. And I'm more, I want to go more depth. I want to work with less people, smaller team, but in more depth. And I think that's a truth that in myself. And then, yeah, even when I share that with people around me, some people are like, oh, I'm totally, totally in for that. And other people are like, why, dude? You've changed. And I'm like, that's kind of the point. You know, if you're the same as you were last year, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, like, what are you even doing? You know, that's part of it. So I think that's a truth that I've been playing with, and it's been very, very, very fun. But what's interesting is most of my clients, I would say 60 to 70% of my clients, are still in that growth scale phase. And then I would say the other 30% are probably the clients that you work with in that second half. You know, they've made an exit or they've achieved what they wanted to achieve. And the conversations we're having is probably the same ones you're having, which is, well, what's the meaning of life? And why are we here? What's the point? What is an existence that's worth thriving for, but also worth suffering for? And what does that look like, you know?
And you know what's so interesting? I can feel you so good in the love in one-on-ones, in coaching, but also in group settings. It's the sum of one-on-one most of the time in my retreats. And not just me and clients, but they coaching, supporting, challenging each other in one-on-one too. And at the same time, yesterday I was on the stage again after 4 years not doing keynotes, because I always felt this privacy, this silence in a one-on-one room, and I really have a nice office where I'm inviting people. That's kind of a holy, sacred space. But at the same time, I felt so much joy and also connectedness with the people. And for sure, it's different if there are 300 people in the audience or if it's just one-on-one. But my question is, and I know you're on the stage too, and you're running groups and training programs, where and how can you feel this depth, this human being connection, where there is a lot of people in the room? So what do you need, or is there any skill or hack or routine you have to feel kind of the same with many people in the room as well?
Yeah, if I'm speaking on stage, I like to look people in the eyes and just hover over them for 5 to 10 seconds and just speak to that person. And then I'll change position on the stage and I'll sort of stroll over to another place, and then I'll look at someone else in the eyes. But and that might not sound like a long time, but to look someone in the eyes for 5 to 10 seconds in a public talk actually is longer than you realize. So I like to do that. I do like to do that.
That's a really good one. And you know what comes up? Holding silence is a magic one too. If you look people in the eyes even more. But that was probably the magic moment yesterday on the stage. Was not my words, my insights, my model, my story. It was actually holding silence in a moment where 4 years ago, I would have been so nervous and scared. And that silence was maybe 5 or max 10 seconds, but that was the most powerful moment, at least for myself. And I got a lot of feedback afterwards for many of them too.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's funny you say that. If I'm speaking at a time of the day where I feel like everybody's switching off, so let's say my speaking slot's like 4 p.m. or it's right before lunch, what I do is I get everyone to stand up, I get everybody to look at each other in the eyes for 60 seconds in silence. And you feel the tension in the room. And, you know, I put my timer on, I look at my watch. Everybody's just staring at each other in the eye. And you see some people start shaking. You see some people want to start burst out laughing. You see every now and then you see two guys like staring at each other like it's a boxing face-off, you know. And then when I say, and time up, you hear everyone go, oh my God. And then everybody starts talking. And like, you know, I like to do that to break the pattern, break the tension, and then also just bring everybody present. And it's so uncomfortable. I don't know if you've done that exercise before or not, but it really is tricky, you know, and particularly as we don't make a lot of eye contact anymore. Like even when we're looking through screens, we're not actually, I'm looking at your eyes, but your eyes are slightly down. I'm guessing my eyes are slightly down. So we're almost not looking each other in the eyes. I find that's a way in a group environment to just break everyone into presence.
It's so powerful. It's one of my favorite exercises. And guess what? I've done it yesterday too. Starting with eye contact and then do a one-on-one speed dating, asking them about success, what their definition about success is. But coming back to the one-on-one and your love and your skills and your connection, it's so interesting. You've been a professional boxer, so there's a lot of one-on-one sparring. And you are back on the boxing stage again, right? What is it in there, the one-on-one you find when you're in the ring, when you fight?
Yeah. Well, just for the record, I was never a professional boxer. I was an amateur. I did manage to make a national level, but there's a difference. So amateur boxers are aiming for the Olympics. Professional boxers are fighting for money and for titles, and that's their thing. I never boxed for money. I boxed because I loved it. And the Olympic route for me is the purest, most form of boxing, because there's no, it's not about the money. It's really about, because amateur boxers, they don't get, I had sponsors and I did get paid, but you know, nobody goes into amateur boxing to make a living. You do it because you love it, you know? The one-to-one element when you look at boxing is it's you versus you all of the time. You know, when you first step into a boxing gym, you're fighting with yourself, because as simple as it looks to hit someone else and not get hit, it's a very technical, difficult game. I remember there was a Russian guy on an interview I saw somewhere, and he goes, boxing is real man chess. And it was very funny. But he's right, because chess is very technical and it's a mental game. And so you're fighting with yourself from the moment you step in the gym, which is, how do I set my feet up? My hands feel off. It feels weird punching the air with people looking at me. Now they want me to make these noises. So you're fighting with yourself. And then eventually you get to a level where you can actually do a little bit of light sparring with someone. And again, you're still fighting with yourself, because you're trying to manage your central nervous system and your breathing and trying to calm yourself down in that environment. And then when you finally do that, then you have an opponent. And when you're good enough to actually be calm enough to breathe in the ring and not just react, well, then the opponent is actually you versus you again, because there are various different strategies you're using against your opponent to disarm your opponent, to break down your opponent, to beat your opponent. But often it's just you looking back at yourself, where you're trying to do the same thing, or you're trying to disarm yourself, you're trying to get better, you're trying to improve. I think the other one-to-one element is figuring out your opponent insofar as what they might be thinking or feeling. So if you can see that they're getting frustrated because of your movement, then you're going to continue to do that. And then if there's something else you can do to upset your opponent and break their rhythm, well, then you're starting to call the shots and then you're in charge. But at the same time, if your opponent is breaking your rhythm and you're starting to get frustrated, it's just you versus you again. So you've got to then reparent yourself and understand that. And then there's the final element, which is the live danger element, which is anyone can put your lights out. You know, it only takes one lucky punch in a funny place or a funny position, and yeah, the lights go out, or you get injured, or you get hurt. Or a body shot, often are more debilitating than getting punched in the head. So then there's that element of you're playing with fire. And there's a phrase in boxing I disagree with. Every boxing gym says this, which is, you don't play boxing. You play football. You don't play boxing. This is serious life and death stuff in here. But I spent a lot of my life like that. I didn't enjoy my career. So I would teach kids, because that's one of my life goals, is giving back to disadvantaged children and just teaching them the power of boxing, is you do play boxing, but just understand it's a dangerous game. It's a game, play it, but just understand there's an inherent level of danger that might not be the same as other sports. And then all of those same metaphors then translate into business. It's all the same thing. You're going to experience the same emotions, fear, doubt, uncertainty, triumph, tribulation, defeat, public defeat, you know, and you're going to experience that in life. And if you can learn to manage that in a very structured environment with the right people around you, it sets you up, you know, that ability to be resilient, that ability to publicly win and publicly fail and There's always someone better than you, more experienced than you, stronger than you, faster than you. But that's not about them. It's about how you deal with that, you know? So I think that the one-to-one element, it's what I love. And it's also a lonely existence, right? Because again, it's you versus you, you know? There's no, like when you get beat in boxing, there's no, you can't, the winger wasn't running, or the goalkeeper spilled it, or no, it was you in front of an audience, and you either won or you lost, and that can be very lonely and isolating. And yeah, it's about rebuilding yourself, and you know, when the mirror is held up that you weren't good enough that day, you can choose to look out the window, or you can choose to stare back and go, how did I create this, you know? So yeah, there's a bit of a speech there, but that's what came out of my soul as you asked me. Thank you.
This is so beautiful, Kieran. You know why? We go already a layer deeper, starting from your love to one-on-one, one-on-one to a coachee, to a partner, to a friend, to my kids, to whoever. And at the same time, you say, even in boxing, from the outside perspective, it looks like you against the other one, but at the same time, it's you against you. And that's such a big, beautiful perspective on life. And I'm thinking of myself playing tennis right now. This is my like end game of me against me, especially in service. So different from point to point, from game to game. But what I love even more is the context you're putting it into. Is it you against you in terms of fighting, or is it, or could it be you and you in terms of playing with each other, playing with different elements, strengths, attitudes, values? I mean, we could go really deep there, like the me, the ego, the self, whoever plays, but there is some inner playmakers, I would say, within yourself. So it's probably even more, it's the one-on-one with yourself that you like the most. Coming back to your question, what would I do if money doesn't exist?
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because I talk like a lot of my work for my clients, I try to avoid too much navel gazing. I try to avoid too much over intellectualization or too much self introspection. Self introspection is really important, and sometimes we do need to go deep within oneself to understand, well, what are some emotional blockers that are stopping you from thinking and feeling and performing at the levels and the happiness and joy that you could be. But then there comes a point where too much self-engineering, too much introspection, you know, it can actually cause harm, and it can cause self-harm. Sometimes I get clients, they come to me and they say, I've had like 5 different therapists and psychologists, and I've worked with performance coaches. Like, I know all about this. And I said, well, maybe that's the problem. You need to stop. I'm like, whoa, what do you mean? It's like, stop. You know, I always say, you've got to be smart enough to know what to do. You've got to be dumb enough to do it. And sometimes we can be too smart, not dumb enough. And as a result, nothing gets done. And you're just stuck on the whiteboard, or you're stuck in the journal, and nothing moves, you know? So I think as fun, as an engaging as it is to do that introspection and me versus me, the next level of me versus me is also understanding that maybe too much of that is actually unhelpful. And sometimes you need to dumb yourself down to just get more done and enjoy the process of being present. And and one thing that I've been playing with a lot the past 2 months is just, I've been just saying this to myself, hour by hour, just hour by hour, hour by hour. How do I play the next hour? How do I play the next hour? Almost like I'm an Arsenal fan, as you know. I think we are technically, we're 5 points clear of Man City at the time of recording. It's probably going to be 2 points because they have a game in hand. You just got to play the next game. You just play the next match. You know, it's the same concept. So,
it's It's funny you say that. I've never made it to Arsenal, but I played for the Austrian national team. And you know what? Our coach, he was such a smart and visionary coach. And at the same time, he always said when we went to the World Cup in Canada that time, he said, we are thinking and playing from halftime to halftime. And you can see 18 years later, the halftime still sticks in my wedding, in my business, in my metaphors. And that was so powerful because we went there, you know, as little Austrians going to this gigantic World Cup. We were such tiny players in this world in our minds at that time. But what we did have was fun, was a team spirit. And then we went there and played, I think the first game was 0-0 and then a 1-0 against Canada, 50,000 people in the stadium. And then the flow started to kick off and we just surfed the wave the entire tournament till semifinal. And then we just overthought the process and then we wanted to go come to the final so much. And that was the time where we lost the flow. Are you familiar with the Chinese calendar, Kieran?
No. I think like there's years and there's animals, as I understand it. But I can't say I'm too clued up on it.
Me neither. I'm not an expert as well. But what I do start to understand that there is collective energies we can feel and again we can surf on. And last year in the Chinese calendar was the year of the snake, and it was a lot about getting loose, ending stuff, put things in order. And now just in February 26, the year of the fire horse just started, and that came to my mind when you were telling people, guys, stop overthinking stuff, just do stuff, just make shit up and go for it. The trial and error approach. And this year, and especially, I think it started like February 17th. I don't know where you are exactly, but many people in my surrounding feel like in January, where our calendar starts, we feel like, we should, you know, New Year's resolutions, we should kick it off, we should paint like big, beautiful vision boards. And at the same time, most of the time, I feel it too. It's not the energy to kick things off. And it often happens then end of January, beginning of February. And this could be just a coincidence. But I'm starting to realize and even more sense these energies. And this is the year where you not just let loose and put things in order, but really go to your next level, whatever this could be, higher, deeper, different. But it's a lot about getting things done, going out there and just practice and enjoy and be in connection. Instead of just sit on your desk and work on structures and theoretical stuff all the time. So how do you feel about that in your life right now when you look to this year of 2026? What's the wave you already feel or you wish you would like to surf this year?
Yeah, so... the fire horse energy for me in my work is probably the certification business. So we ran a test last year where 15 coaches signed up and they were learning the same framework and the same model that I've used with my team and with our consultants, with 500 one-to-one clients. And we tested that. We got some really good results and some of the guys and the client results they're getting is really powerful. And we've been helping them sign their first few mental performance clients as well and some after graduation support. And there's a lot of fire horse energy in that community. I can't say I've built many community businesses where the main focus is on the community versus the one-to-one element. But this is like the first one I can really feel fire horse energy. So I would say this year that's a project. We've got the next intakes in April. I think there's some fire horse energy in there for sure. But then in other areas of life, I don't know if the answer is fire horse. or if actually it's something I need a little bit more water. You know, like our four company values are be water, be honor, be love, have fun. You know? And I think some of it is actually applying some water to the fire. Too much fire will burn the house down, you know. I took a twist on Customato's fear is like fire. And for me, it's about ambition. Ambition is like fire, which is fire is great. You know, it can put man on the moon. It can keep our houses warm. We can cook our chops. Too much will burn the house down. It'll burn the forests down. And I think it's the same with ambition. So yeah, there's parts of me where I really feel, oh, right, this is part of the fire horse. But then there's other parts of me where, you know, things are nuanced. And I'm like, well, maybe in that area, I need to pour a little bit of water. Little bit of water on that. Yeah.
And again, I'm coming back to truth. I sent you a video where this guy is talking about the fire hose and the energies and how you can adapt them or use them. But at the same time, it is a strong energy. It's intense. But if you're coming from a place of, again, truth, or love, or win-win, this is the wave you can surf. The other one is like in surfing, you're landing in the washing machine where the intensity of the wave can even hurt you if you're not consciously choosing your path and your actions.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, like if we look at 2026, like as a year in history, you know, every year feels like the most important year. Every year can often feel like, oh, the world is ending or the world is changing, you know. But if we look at this year, what are things we're contending with? Well, AI, we're looking at market instability. We're looking at potential World War III, you know, with the geopolitical landscape. We're looking at markets changing. We're looking at businesses changing. We're looking at roles changing. We're looking at so much change. Even super far left field, you've got Donald Trump saying, right, we're going to release the alien files. You know, they've already released the Epstein files. Like there's a lot of change going on and there's a lot of noise. Right? There's a hell of a lot of noise. So I think the fire horse is great, but there's already a lot of fire and there's already a lot of chaos. And what I'm curious about is how can you put the blinders on the horse? You know, horse blinders, when they have race horses, they have blinders on either side to stop it from getting distracted from the horses running next to them. You know, how can we put the blinders on the fire horse and play the game in a way in which, yeah, you still have that throughput, but how can you be the lighthouse in the storm? How can you be the lighthouse in the fog and just focusing and enjoying? And I think that's what comes up for me in like this sort of energy of this year. I don't know if any of that even makes sense, but that's what, when I think about that kind of energy, that's what comes up for me, is putting the blinders on the fire horse, you know, and just getting burnt up by it.
And at the same time, feel the connection to your surroundings, to your loved ones, to partners, to supporters, and people you can support with your fire, with your passion, with your ambition.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Kieran, coming back to your question, if money did not exist, how would I spend my time? How would you not spend your time anymore this year? What is the number one that's on your mind? What you would and love to let loose of? Could be anything.
You know, man, I live a really good life. Like I've really optimized this. I do spend most of my time doing the things I love. And in my business, I've set up systems and made the right appropriate hires and that helps me eliminate the things I don't enjoy spending my time and the things that I do need to spend my time on that I don't enjoy are very structured, and they're like these little sprints where it's like, right, sit down, get this done. I'm kind of sat there with Kirsten, my creative director and operations manager, and she just pulls it out of me. She's like, right, here's all the frogs' heads that you got to bite off this morning, and then we just attack them and we spend like 60 to 90 minutes, we get them out of the way, and she goes, right, you're free to go. Treats me almost like a playful child. She's like, right, you've eaten your green beans, go off and do your things, you know? So like at work, I wouldn't change. The only thing I would maybe adjust is just the workload slightly. I like working hard. I like the feeling of working hard. But maybe I would dial back maybe one or two less one-to-one clients to create a little bit more space, because the certification project really it's quite a heady game. I need a lot of space for heady games, you know. My personal life, I mean, it's we're coming to the end of our winter now here, but our winter is like the summer in Europe out here. So like, I'm spending a lot of time up in the mountains. I'm spending a lot of time walking in the desert, you know, having fires, sitting by the beach, seeing friends, you know, playing chess in the sun, boxing. So again, like, I've had to fight really hard to curate this existence. I know a lot of that will change in the next couple of years. So I'm on that sense, I'm really glad you asked that question. Actually, I appreciate my existence more. I found like I've done a pretty good job at optimizing for that, you know.
You did, Kieran. We always underestimate what we can achieve in a year or in 3 years' time, right? We are on our to-do lists and tasks and weeks and hustling, and that can be a beautiful energy too. I can sense you as this all-in performer, as an athlete also in your business. But at the same time, to find your balance. And this could be hour by hour different. The first things that comes to my mind is probably less screen time. That's probably my number one.
Yeah, tell me more about that.
For sure, in front of my kids. That's probably the worst thing I do with my kids, is still being too much on my phone in front of them. And again, here, I love writing. I love content production. I love the podcast. But at the same time, a lot of my work is sitting in front of the screen, writing a post, you know, commenting on LinkedIn. And probably, I mean, I would need to go to Dubai or to Austria, and we met in Vienna just a few weeks ago. But at the same time, I'm very grateful for all these options. But in my daily life, it's just in some days a little too much. So it would be probably more of a 50-50, putting in the AirPods and doing more one-on-one calls, meetings, coachings in the forest, just speaking. Audio, doesn't have to be video all the time. Stuff like that. I already do, I improve, but still, it's just a little too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, there's seasons, right? There's seasons of life. And perhaps this season, there's just a lot going on. And it's about, I like to think of like the you know, the light switches, you got on or off, or then you can dial it up and dial it down. And it tends to be optimization and just being able to dial things versus turning them on, turning them off, you know. But if money didn't exist, how would you spend your time?
One-on-one. I feel the one-on-ones. The first thing that comes up when I think of one-on-one is one-on-one with my kids. As you know, there is our third child in our family now. And we're having a lot of family time together. We just spent holidays in Egypt together, 10 days full on. But at the same time, it's getting more and more challenge to have one-on-one time with my kids. And this is a matter of money too. I have my savings, business as well, but at the same time, I need to work. And this is always finding the balance, spending time with my kids. But at the same time, to be really honest, if I have to, I can stay at home as a being home dad, or however you call it in English, full. But at the same time, I love my work so much that it's all about the balance. And again, one day you always miss what you don't have right now. The grass is always green on the other side, right? So again, I'm very grateful, but that was the first thing that came to my mind. And especially with my son, who just started playing football in the club, and he's very passionate, a lot of fire, but there is a lot of emotions coming in. For example, 2 weeks ago, they had their first tournament and they just ended up last. And he still had fun, but he starts to think about winning and losing and how good he is or whatever that does to himself when they are losing or when he's not playing. So being a guide, being a supporter on this path is one of my biggest goals this year and probably on for the next years, I guess.
Cool. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I absolutely love it. And yeah, like with that, you know, so some of the work that I do with clients is one-to-one trauma work, whether that's a capital T or little t. And the amount of men that have played football or rugby or, you know, team sports and didn't have that person in their corner that's seen the dark side of sports, the amount of trauma that comes up on a football pitch or a rugby pitch that affects people as adults. You know, look at your story and everything that you've done in the game, you know, you've seen that firsthand. But yeah, your son's very lucky to have someone in their corner that's been there, seen it, understood it, the upside of sport, but then also the downside of that. So yeah, he's very fortunate to have a guide like you in his corner, man.
I try. And it's beautiful that you mention it, because this is a core topic in my work as well, working with people, is pain to purpose. And it could be some pain also as a grow-up, but like you said, there's a lot of trauma work too, where it's not about only surviving and getting rid of something, but getting in touch with the energy again. And when I'm completely honest, there was trauma in professional football too. But at the same time, and I'm just starting now in May, my new journey with our Impact Playmaker. And I'm inviting the football energy back. So it's kind of, you could say trauma energy, but you know, I've worked on that like for 12 years, but it's healed. I'm in peace, but there is so much energy still in my experiences, in my history, that just again gives me power and fire for my purpose, pain to purpose, to support my son, but at the same time, other high performers. Not just being like on the couch and enjoy their time being, but also doing stuff, but out of this quality of being yourself and being connected to your purpose. And this is so beautiful. It's such a different game.
Yeah, the image that came to mind was like peak Mesut Ozil. Like when he played with the ball, it just looked like almost like a conductor at the orchestra, you know. He just not thinking, just, okay, I'll nutmeg this player and I'll pretend to pass it that way and I'll shoot it left and I'll put this little beautiful through ball through there, and then somebody would go and stick it in the back of the net, you know, usually a Aubameyang.
Looks like magic. It is some kind of art. People like him or Messi or Iniesta, but at the same time, they are so connected to their roots, and for sure also talent and superpower and skills. But it's not just coming from them. It's being in a connected. Sometimes it even looks like an enlightened place, just bringing their light to the world. And for some, it's playing football. For some, boxing. For some, it's growing, seeing your kids growing up and support them, or whatever. But again, feel your truth. What's your path and where's your spot? Oh, Kieran, tell me more.
Yeah. Well, there's a metaphor that's come up in that, right? Because if you look at players like Mesut Ozil or Lionel Messi, those real playmakers that could make something out of nothing, that magic. And then if you look at football today, where everything's system-based, where players are seen more as a cog in a machine And they, a classic example is Jack Grealish from Aston Villa over to Man City. You know, he was just this player that could just play. You give him the ball, he'd go and make magic happen. Pep says, this is my system. You play within this structure. And it just completely broke him. You know, it broke the artist. And I think there's a metaphor for that also just in our world, in the way in which businesses operate, in the way in which, you know, everything's so formulaic and so system driven that actually maybe sometimes we have lost the art of randomness and lost the art of magic and lost the art of having the space to just go and create and to just go and play with that freedom. You know, I see that with a lot of my clients is they get stagnant. They hit a glass ceiling in their business and they can't get to that next league and can't get to the next level. And, you know, a lot of my clients don't have structure, but a lot of the ones that have plateaued actually have so much structure. They're so stuck in routine, so stuck in a system that they don't have the archaic chaos to go and create something out of nothing. And I think there's a metaphor in there for playing and creativity in particular. Like when you get stuck in creativity, the magic often doesn't happen sat behind your desk doing the same things. It happens on a plane. It happens in a different part of the world. And it's having the courage and the chaos to create that space for you to go and do.
For me, it's happening on the toilet most of the time, or in the shower, or walking somewhere outside, but mainly never at my desk. That's a really powerful metaphor, Kieran, creating arts instead of try to be perfect in times where the AI can do a lot of stuff. It's so powerful. But at the same time, when I think about my content creation and my love of writing, I did try, you know, be supported, getting ideas from ChatGPT, and I can produce more and I can produce longer and you can produce everything you want. But at the same time, the posts I and most of the time my followers liked, commented, were touched off the most were white paper, one emotion, one really deep down insight I'd love to share to be in service. This was the one. Still is. And I always think that do the opposite is at least a good perspective to look on things, especially if you want to grow yourself and also grow your business.
Yeah. It's allowing yourself to just play instead of taking the game so seriously, you know?
Allow yourself to play. I feel that's a nice one for the end, Kieran. That's a beautiful circle we just closed. Is there anything else you would like to add, ask, share in the context we were just talking about?
Yeah, I mean, playing the game is like, I'm quite playful. I can be an intense level of playful, but I do play the game and I enjoy playing the game, whether that's business, whether that's coaching, whether that's boxing, whether that's chess. I love chess. I'm no good at it, but I love playing it. I think that is one of the keys to performance, is recognizing that you're in a game, you know, and you know the phrase, don't hate the player, hate the game. Well, there's no point in hating the game because you're in the game. So play the game, lean into the game, understand the rules, and play with it. And I think that's something that we often forget, particularly when life is moving really quick, is we just take things far too seriously. And I like to use a lot of humor. I'm a Brit. I grew up in England, so I like a lot of piss-taking. Piss-taking humor is bloody great, you know, because at the end of the day, even Viktor Frankl, you went to his museum with your guys the other day, you know, like even he said, you know, the ability to have humor in the most darkest of circumstances is one of the paths to freedom, you know. And I think I spent a lot of my life being really serious, and now I like to universally and cosmically laugh at myself, because all the stuff that we're stressed and worrying about are often the problems that we're so fortunate to have, you know. I don't know. I think there's something in that I just wanted to share as well, is performance through play. Not performance through just putting your feet up, but performance through playing. How can you enjoy the game that you play?
Why so serious? You know that song?
Yeah.
I love that you just ended with Viktor Frankl. Kieran, thanks for being here. Thanks for being our beautiful mastermind. I always love and appreciate spending time with you. Thanks for sharing.
Pleasure and honor, Pete. Thanks for having me.
Schön, dass du dir diese Folge auch bis zum Ende gegönnt hast. Ich mache jetzt meine abschließenden Gedanken ganz bewusst wieder auf Deutsch. Ich habe im Intro auch gesagt, ein wichtiger Teil meiner Mission ist, mich von der Welt inspirieren zu lassen, von auch internationalen Leuten wie dem Kieran und gleichzeitig diese Erfahrungen, dieses Mindset nach Hause zu bringen. Und mit nach Hause meine ich natürlich auch mich, meine Sehnsucht, ständig weiter zu lernen, mir weiterzuentwickeln und da über den Tellerrand von Österreich oder des deutschsprachigen Raums hinauszuschauen. Also was ist die eine Sache, die ich für mich mitgenommen habe? Das Leben darf intensiv sein. Es ist nur wichtig, dass du dein Spiel spielst. Und die Frage, die uns Kieran im Podcast geschenkt hat, what if money didn't exist? Was ist, wenn es Geld nicht geben würde? Was würdest du tun? Ist eine riesige Frage und gleichzeitig natürlich müssen wir alle irgendwie unsere Rechnungen bezahlen und manche tun sie da leicht und manche schwerer. Und gleichzeitig ist es eine total schöne Erinnerung, wie würdest du deinen Tag gestalten? Wie würdest du das nächste Kapitel in deinem Leben gestalten? Und manchmal sind es Kleinigkeiten, die wir verändern, kleine Routinen, die wir etablieren, wo wir uns was gönnen, wo wir uns was erlauben. Und manchmal im Leben geht es darum, an wegweisenden Stellen größere Entscheidungen zu treffen. Und da interessiert mich natürlich wie immer am allermeisten, wo stehst du? Wie geht's dir gerade? Was hat dich in dieser Folge berührt? Was nimmst du mit raus? Aber was ist vielleicht auch ganz konkret die Challenge, vor der du jetzt stehst? Und lass es mich wissen. Schreib mir ein paar Zeilen per E-Mail, auf LinkedIn und in den Shownotes findest du auch 2 Touchpoints. Du kannst zu uns Mitte April jetzt in unser Retreat kommen mit dem Namen Halbzeitpause. Da geht's genau darum, um Menschen, die jetzt am Start oder kurz vor einem neuen Kapitel stehen und mehr Klarheit entwickeln wollen, in welche Richtung das geht oder wie sie diese neue Klarheit jetzt umsetzen wollen. Und es gibt den Impact Club, unsere Community, wo wir regelmäßig, so wie ich auch, in meiner Mastermind einchecken, um auf diesem Weg auch dran zu bleiben. Weil das eine ist, inspiriert zu sein von einer Keynote, von einem Buch, von einem Deep Dive, von einem Retreat. Und das andere ist, das Umfeld, dir ein Umfeld zu schaffen, dir ein System zu schaffen, mit Routinen in deinem Kalender, aber vor allem auch mit Menschen, die dich regelmäßig daran erinnern, wofür du wirklich antreten magst. Und vor allem und noch viel wichtiger, wer du eigentlich bist. Und da spreche ich da Herzenseinladung aus. Freue mich total, wenn du dich meldest, wir uns kennenlernen und ich dir gern auch vom Impact Club mehr erzählen kann. Viel Freude und gutes Gelingen auf deinem Weg.